Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 2QB Experience. This is episode 4, the Robert Griffin III Experience. Doesn't really roll off the tongue, but we're going to have to go with it. I am your host, Greg Smith, at Greg Sauce on Twitter. I am joined by your co-host, Joshua Lake. Josh, you have a PSA, a public service announcement for the listeners, and I'm just going to kick it over to you.
Yeah, it's one that we should all know, and I certainly should know, but know your league rules. It's unbelievable. I've been doing this for way too long to be forgetting to know each specific league's rules, but I'm in several dynasty leagues. I'm in 4 now, and I made a trade just this week where I was trading away a future rookie pick and kind of guessing where it was going to fall and thinking, like, is this a high or a low pick? And I was basing it on one way of doing a rookie draft, kind of a serpentine style, where the first round is 1 to 10 and then the second round reverses 10 to 1. But the league is actually not that way. It's the NFL draft style where it's 1 to 10, 1 to 10, 1 to 10. And so what I thought was an early second round pick was actually a late second round pick I was getting back. And so my values were all off. It was just dumb by me to assume it instead of actually double checking something. So knowing the league rules is kind of an axiom that we hear a lot, but I certainly fell prey to assuming something rather than reading up on it. So it was bad by me this week.
It's a humbling experience, isn't it?
It is.
It happens to the best of us, but it is something that is important. And if you play in enough leagues, if you play in certain leagues where the rules change maybe from year to year, where you have like a very active commissioner who's trying to tweak the settings, you got to stay on top of that stuff because it does affect your team. It affects how you need to approach the league. And I don't know, I've made those types of mistakes before. I see a lot of other owners making, you know, mistakes in the same way, usually more so than, you know, someone like myself or Josh would. The occasional hiccup, I guess, is to be expected, but yeah, it's interesting to me because I think there are a lot of instances where people in almost intentionally don't know the rules just to confirm their own biases, to, you know, make their own decisions seem correct. They're like, oh, well, I like this player. I want to make a deal for him. And I'm just going to, you know, subconsciously ignore the fact that the rules aren't set up to, you know, help me out in this particular situation.
That's an interesting point. Like, a common occurrence of that is players, like fantasy owners, overvaluing a running back who isn't really involved in the passing game, and it's a PPR league. So someone like an Alfred Morris or just a running back that historically hasn't caught passes out of the backfield, but you're just like, I love this guy. I think he's a good runner, and I'm gonna value him highly, kind of ignoring the fact that your league is PPR and kind of skews running back values. That's one I've seen quite often.
Or vice versa, where someone who's used to playing in a PPR league ends up in a league that isn't PPR, and they look at a guy like Darren Sproles, and they go, oh, yeah, I want to draft this guy. Or, I don't know, I've seen it actually go the opposite way as well. This isn't a vice versa situation, but I've seen people look at a league setup and take the rules to an extreme. Like both of my home leagues are leagues with return yardage as a stat. And we don't reward it very heavily. It's like 30 yards for a point. And there really aren't that many return men who are also, you know, viable running backs or viable wide receivers. So the return yardage is just a little bit of gravy on top of a player. A guy like Sproles does jump up in value a little bit in that sort of setup. But I don't want to call this guy out by name, but one of my league mates a few years back just really tried to hammer this one, what he thought to be an advantage of return yardage. So he was drafting all these guys way too high based on one difference in the league when, you know, it really wasn't that important in the grand scheme of things. He should have just been targeting the same, you know, quality running backs, quality wide receivers that everyone else was. That's another instance where you might know your league rules and it might be a detriment to you if you put too much stock into that sort of stuff.
That's a good one.
All right. So thank you for that, Josh. That is a good reminder to all the listeners. Next up, I want to get into a little bit of work that's been going on at 2QBs.com. The first is another piece from our guest from the last episode, Anthony Amico. This is another armchair scouting report. This one is for Vernon Adams. And I'll let you read the piece, but let's just say that Anthony is in on Vernon. And I don't know. What do you think, Josh? Do you have any takes on Adams?
Yeah, I think he is a guy that kind of like Anthony points out is being overlooked a little too much. I mean, sure, you can force him into a Russell Wilson comparison and say he's going to go late, he's small, he has some rushing ability. But I mean, he's not Russell Wilson, but I also don't think he's this undrafted caliber for two quarterback leagues that some people are making him out to be. So I'll be very interested to see where he lands, and almost assuredly he won't have a starting role for this season, but he is a name to know. I think he's interesting. Like Anthony says, he really has some numbers to back up the idea that he could be successful in the NFL. So I thought it was a really good piece.
Yeah, I really just love every one of those articles that he does. Because I'm not a college football fan, it gives me a good insight into some of these quarterbacks that we might be seeing. And while Vernon Adams doesn't profile as a guy we're going to see, in 2016, down the line, who knows? The other thing I wanted to talk about was our continuing Twitter poll rankings, where the Twitter followers of 2QBs will rank quarterbacks head to head, and we're assembling rankings out of these. We talked about this a little bit on the last episode, and we've had some more, a lot more polls since then. We've gone through another, I don't know, 15 quarterbacks or so. And man, the precipitous drop of Tyrod Taylor. What's the deal, man? That is so weird to me. I figured that he would be overhyped after the season he just had, and no one wants him. It's incredible.
Yeah, what gives? I mean, I'm lower. I've talked about I'm lower on Tyrod than a lot of our rankers, including you are, but
Yep.
I don't understand it either. You look at the comparison to me is Tyrod, Blake Bortles, and Kirk Cousins all kind of came out of nowhere and had great QB1 points per game type seasons, and only Bortles is being drafted like that just happened. It's kind of surprising how far Tyrod has fallen and Kirk, but when I don't really see a reason that they should be so dramatically different from Bortles.
How much of it do you think has to do with the coach speak that's come out since the end of the season, where the Bills brass have kind of said, yeah, we're not sure Tyrod's the guy. He might just be a short-term solution. He's not guaranteed to be the starter next year. All that talk, I mean, I'm assuming that has something to do with this because otherwise there's no explanation. He runs the ball as a quarterback. He has good weapons. He has Sammy Watkins. I don't get it. Like I want Tyrod Taylor next year, and none of the readers or followers do. It's surprising to me.
Yeah, it really is. And I think you're right that that's a good point as far as how the Bills have talked about him, and they haven't signed him to a long-term deal, but that matters in Dynasty. But they're not going to bench him for EJ Manuel except in a really terrible situation. I don't think that he's this huge bench risk in 2016, although he does have some concerns like for future seasons. So the redraft is where I'm really surprised.
Now, you actually bring up a point that I hadn't really considered, and the fact is that because of what we're seeing in the news around Tyrod Taylor, it is possible that in Dynasty he is dropping in value for a good reason, right? Now, maybe this is just coincidence, the fact that we're taking these polls in March, that the majority of people who are looking at the polls and are interested in quarterback rankings are Dynasty people, and I've feel like we were intentionally specific about these polls being for redraft, but it's possible that just the dynasty biases of who's participating in the polls are just filtering into the results. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and I think that's a very solid point I hadn't really considered because, like you said, the question is very specific to redraft, but the type of person that's on Twitter following fantasy football people answering a fantasy football poll in the middle of March likely is a dynasty owner. I mean, not everyone is, but I would agree with you. That's probably a good point that a large percentage of the Twitter audience right now and the people that are voting probably do have that subconscious bias, even if they don't realize there's kind of their perceptions are slanted by that.
Yeah, and I think we can kind of take that angle and apply it not just to these polls, but to fantasy football analysis in general. Is that a lot of the stuff that you're seeing now on Twitter, the stuff that you're reading, is going to be dynasty centric, whether it's explicitly stated that way or not. And in general, you want to take all this stuff with a grain of salt, and you need to apply your own reasoning, your own logic to, follow your own league settings, as discussed previously, when it comes to ranking these guys, because Tyrod Taylor may not be a good dynasty buy, but in terms of 2016, I don't think there's anything not to like about him other than the fact that he is young and slightly unproven in the sense that we've only seen him do it for one season.
No, sorry to cut you off. I was going to say all of that is a good lead in to us having a Tyrod Taylor piece out next week.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Are there any more of these Twitter polls that you want to touch on here? Because we, like I said, we've been through a lot of different QBs and some of the results are pretty interesting.
Yeah. And you, for the listeners, you can find the rankings up on our site. So if you just go to Redraft Rankings, we have an actual column for the reader rankings, which are being voted on all through March. But you can see those. They're current and up to date as of our recording right now. And then we have an article that will be updated once a week, roughly. The one that really, I guess it's two polls, but the comparison that's surprising to me is seeing Kirk Cousins stacked up against two different quarterbacks. He was in polls against Joe Flacco and Alex Smith, both of whom are typically kind of undervalued, kind of boring, not seen as very valuable, but in two quarterback leagues, they take on some additional value just for their reliability. And so in a lot of ways, I see Flacco and Smith as having had similar seasons over the last several years. But in the polls against Kirk Cousins, Joe Flacco and Kirk Cousins were nearly dead even. It was actually finished as 50% to 50%, just completely seen as the same. I mean, voters were equally split. But when you put Kirk Cousins against Alex Smith, Cousins blew him out of the water. He got 87% of the vote. People would far rather have Cousins than have Alex Smith. And I found that really surprising. Not that people would like Flacco more than Smith. I mean, I can see that. There's some reasons for it. But that the gap would be so enormous that almost 40% additional voters would go to Cousins over Alex Smith. Like, I really didn't see that coming. I guess that people... My hunch is that people are really high on Flacco, that they see Trestman coming in, that they think Rashad Perriman's going to be healthy, and they expect big things from that offense. But I was surprised that the perception on Flacco is so much higher than it is for Alex Smith.
Yeah, I think one thing you might be seeing is another situation where Alex Smith is going to be our new Tyrod Taylor because he lost that vote against Kirk Cousins in a landslide. Ryan Fitzpatrick crushed him, 63% to 37%. And as we speak today, Ryan Tannehill is well ahead of Alex Smith in today's poll, 70% to 30%. So it might just be that our voters hate Alex Smith. And, man, that's fine with me because that means I'm going to get Alex Smith at a severe discount yet again in 2016.
Yeah. No, he is a great 2QB asset because he is that reliable QB2 I've talked about a lot and you've talked about a lot, that just having someone you know is going to be plug and play available, that's a great value, especially when you can wait and get him as the 20th or 25th. I mean, we'll see how far he falls, but he's going to be a pretty late quarterback, it looks like.
Yep. All good stuff. We should also note that, you know, the rankings are inherently a little flawed because while we did compare Joe Flacco to Kirk Cousins and then Kirk Cousins to Alex Smith, we weren't really able to compare Alex Smith directly to Joe Flacco like you talked about. So take all this stuff for what it's worth. It's just for fun. We want to see generally where the readers fall in some of these guys, but the results have been interesting and surprising to me. I'm curious to see how it continues at 2QBs. Next up, I want to dive into a little bit of the free agent news. We're not going to touch on everything, but there are a few key signings that I wanted to note that we did not talk about on the last episode. The first is Alfred Morris signing with the Dallas Cowboys. I do want to note that Lance Dunbar also re-signed with Dallas, and it looks like that's a good 1-2 punch to me. What do you think?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because a lot of people had speculated that the Cowboys would draft a running back, and they still, at least as of our recording, have Darren McFadden on the roster. So it'll be interesting, but Alfred Morris has proved he's a reliable ground game guy, and certainly not last year, but his previous years he had been doing well. He's been on the decline since 2012, but we've seen that he can have some decent seasons, and his run blocking has improved from, depending on who you read, the Redskins were at roughly kind of the middle of the league to the Cowboys, who are near the top. So there's some reason to like this here, but I was a little surprised by it. I did not expect Alfred Morris would be the guy for Dallas, and it could very well be that they still make some more moves. But he'll be interesting if he's going to be kind of the lead back for first and second down. What do you think?
I like it. I do think that this is more intriguing if you're not playing in a PPR league. But I mean, your point about offensive line is very important. The Cowboys are kind of known at this point, over the past couple of years for having a great run blocking system, and that bodes really well for Alf. And I do think that them signing Dunbar back to their team does indicate that Morris isn't going to get a whole lot of passing down work. We have no idea what's going to go on with McFadden as well. I think this is a smart football move from the Cowboys in the sense that now they don't have to draft a running back if the value isn't there. Now, for fantasy, yeah, I mean, I think Morris will probably be a little overrated because of the Dallas line, but that doesn't mean he won't be useful or viable. I'm kind of on the fence about the signing in general. I'm a little worried that, the decline we saw from him last season wasn't just because the Redskins had so many other options, with Matt Jones and Chris Thompson. I'm a little worried that maybe they knew something that the other teams and we, the general football viewing public didn't see when it came to Alfred Morris. Yeah, I mean, you're a Washington fan. What do you think of him in general? I mean, is this a guy you expect to bounce back?
Yeah, it's interesting to see because both he and Matt Jones had really, really low yards per carry and really struggled this year. The Redskins offensive line started out bad and they improved some, but they still were kind of a middle of the road team. But I did think it was interesting that it wasn't that Alfred Morris was just terrible and then Matt Jones was coming in and finding these huge holes. So I tend to like Alfred Morris fine. I agree with what you said that it's probably a better football move than a fantasy football move. Alfred Morris in non-PPR leagues, which again you said could be kind of a running back two, a low running back two potentially, depending on what happens, but he's not very exciting to me. But as a Redskins fan, I'm not thrilled that the Cowboys signed a decent running back and stole one from us, but you're right that the Redskins really showed no interest in re-signing him. Before free agency opened, the team, several officials kind of came out and basically said, we're not really bringing him back at any price. Like he wasn't on their radar even at a veteran minimum. So that does kind of speak to how they felt about him. And for the rest of us, we're kind of guessing the people that saw him every day, the fact that they didn't want to re-sign him could speak to what they expect him to do in the future. I would say I don't feel confident in my own analysis of running backs to really trump what these NFL teams have seen.
And it could be as simple as the fact that they had these younger guys on the roster that they felt more comfortable with moving forward. But maybe it is that they saw something from Alf that did not please them and that they thought that maybe he was declining and they needed to get rid of him. So we'll find out. In general, I think the Cowboys have shown recently the willingness to committee their backs, and I don't think that bodes well for anybody in that backfield. But yeah, I mean, we'll find out. The next move I want to talk about is Mark Sanchez going to the Broncos. We have to assume at this point that this is not a move to sign a starter, that Sanchez is probably going to be backing somebody else up. But I'm curious what you think would happen if Sanchez was named the starter, if the Broncos did miss out on all the other potential quarterback options to them.
That's an interesting question. I have always been a fan of Mark Sanchez, which is funny to say. I don't think he's that good, but I do think he's overlooked. He can be a reasonable low-end NFL starter, and I think he could probably play a reasonable Brock Osweiler from last season. So Brock Osweiler in 8 games had 10 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. If you stretch that out and kind of prorate that for the whole season, that'd be roughly a 20 touchdown season. He could probably do a little better than that. Say he gets 22, 24 touchdowns. I think that's reasonable that with a good group of receivers around him in a Kubiak offense that's not going to really rely on the quarterback, he could be kind of a boring, not very good fantasy option, but worth starting. That's kind of where I would picture him if he's the starter. But like you said, we're way too early to say that's going to happen. Would you think he'd have any value if they just aren't able to find another guy?
I think he would. A lot of it has to do with how good that team is. I think that if the Broncos defense maintains its maybe not, you know, best in the league status, but, you know, top five, top 10 status, Sanchez won't have to throw quite as much, which could keep his interception totals down. And I think that that's a lot of the problem with Sanchez were the turnovers, the inaccuracy leading to turnovers. And if he's not asked to throw quite as much, I think that bodes really well for him over the course of a season. But yeah, like I said at the top, I don't think this is a guy who they want to start. I think that he's kind of a backup plan in case they miss out on everybody else. But we'll find out. Next up, Ruben Randle to the Eagles. And this is pretty recent. I don't care too much about this. What about you?
Yeah, Ruben Randle is not good. He put up some pretty decent numbers. Yeah, but it's a crowded group of receivers. He's not good. Who knows what they'll be, but I don't think that a Peterson offense is going to really make a third receiver interesting. So for fantasy, I don't find it too appealing.
And almost a fourth receiver if you count Zach Ertz as well. I don't care. I'm not a Ruben Randle guy. Last one I want to talk about is Martellus Bennett signing with the Patriots. Gronk plus Bennett equals what?
Good. Not a lot of teams have that much talent in their two tight ends, but I think Bennett will be fine. Really, we're going to get into tight ends more here right after this, but Bennett is going to have a hard time because Gronk will steal a lot of the red zone looks, which is where tight ends get a lot of their value from. And so I think there may be some overvaluing of Martellus Bennett just because he is going to be dwarfed by Gronk when it comes to red zone opportunity. And so I think he may be a little overdrafted, but he certainly goes to a fine situation, and we've seen them make two tight ends relevant in the past.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that as well, if only because tight ends do tend to be touchdown dependent. Not necessarily in the New England system. We saw Aaron Hernandez, you know, before he became, you know, a
Aaron
criminal.
Hernandez.
Yeah, exactly. Before we found out the type of person he really was. We saw him deliver pretty big PPR numbers as just a general receiver. He didn't catch a ton of touchdowns. I don't know if Bennett profiles to be that type of tight end for the Patriots, but you have to imagine that they're going to use him well. I do have concerns about kind of this smear campaign that's happened after this signing, detailing Bennett as a bit of a diva, a guy who may not be the easiest to coach. And I am curious to see what happens when he is paired up, you know, with Gronk, who does kind of command a certain percentage of the target share there in New England. If Bennett's, you know, in this new situation and not getting quite as many looks as maybe he would in Chicago, where the receivers were a lot more thin, how's he going to handle that? Time will tell, but that gives me a little bit of concern. But it might also just be the fact that, you know, his former team and you know, the anti-Bennett people out there just want to kind of throw shade at him since he signed with the big bad Patriots. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's true. And to me, he is just kind of a goofy, off-the-wall kind of guy. He and I were in college at Texas A&M at the same time. We didn't interact. I don't want to say that. But I don't think that the perception of him has really changed from college to now, that he is just a fun-loving, kind of off-the-wall sort of guy. But I don't think he's the sort of character issue that you have to worry about. I mean, he's not Aaron Hernandez. No
Thank
one
God.
Is. But I don't think that he's the sort of worry of, like, is he going to refuse to play? Is he going to refuse to show up? He's more along the lines of, is he going to give you 110%? That really seems to be more of the concern, at least from my perception of things.
Well, yeah, and we've seen that if you are a type of guy who does not do that and you play for the New England Patriots, you're just not going to play. And so that'll be made pretty clear pretty early, I'd imagine. And I don't think that he's the type of player who would sign there and not buy into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, you alluded to this, but I do want to spend a little bit more time talking about tight ends in general, and tight ends specifically in two quarterback formats, two QB leagues, super flex leagues. With quarterbacks bumping up to two per team, you know, every week in the starting lineup, that makes tight ends the only position players, you know, non-kickers, non-defense, who are generally one of. So, I mean, you'll see some leagues that have, you know, two tight ends or a flex where you can play a tight end. But in general, week to week, you're probably only going to start one at a time. And I think that that's interesting. I think that tight end tends to get overlooked for two quarterback leagues because of this. I mean, the big name guys don't get overlooked. Rob Gronkowski, Tyler Eifert, Jordan Reed in the upcoming season. But I'm curious to get just a little bit of a take from you, Josh, because I don't really know what your philosophy is on tight ends, and you don't have to go in depth, but are you the type of player who drafts them early? Do you tend to wait on tight end? What's your philosophy when it comes to these guys?
I think it's an interesting question, and your point is good that they tend to be overlooked, particularly in two quarterback leagues. I am guilty of that myself. I tend to be someone that drafts them pretty late. The exception being that my home league, that is an auction based redraft league, has tended to spend a lot on Gronk, and then whoever the second tight end that year is seems to go very cheap. And so if there's a massive gap between, in the past it's been Jimmy Graham or maybe it's Jordan Reed this year, if there's this enormous gap between them, which really kind of plays out better in auction than it does in drafts a lot, I'll look at that. But unless kind of the second guy tends to be a huge discount, I'll typically wait quite a while, just because I don't see, outside of Gronk, I don't think that it is a huge asset for your team, especially when you're starting two of every other position. What about you? I thought this was an interesting question you posed for this episode. What is your approach to tight ends?
I'm like you. I tend to overlook them. And I do think this is a pitfall of my fantasy game, to be honest, and I should probably spend a little bit more time researching the tight end position and how to value them relative to running backs, wide receivers, and quarterbacks. But because you only start one, they often just become an afterthought for me. And I don't know. I've definitely been burned by that in the past where, you know, I waited and waited and waited to draft tight ends, and, you know, you end up just playing tight end roulette throughout the season because the guy you drafted wasn't consistent and the next guy you pick up isn't consistent on down the line. Eventually you hope to find somebody who's going to stick, and it's just hard to do because there aren't that many guys who are really good at the position. I think a lot of that has to do with the specialization that we're seeing from NFL offenses, where you have blocking tight ends and you have receiving tight ends, and there aren't that many guys who can do both. So I think that it's important to figure out what you want out of your tight end, like what skills to look for, what aspects of their game to look for. I'm definitely a believer that, you know, there are certain guys that are worth drafting higher. Now, is Rob Gronkowski worth a first or second round pick? That I don't know. I tend to avoid him there, if only because of the one of or the one off aspect of the position. I find that having Gronk, while it is an advantage at that spot in your lineup, it isn't so much of an advantage that it's worth taking over a position where you have to fill multiple spots. Because you have to have two running backs and two or three wide receivers, if you can get an advantage in those spots, you're much better off because you're getting an advantage at a position that's in higher demand. And that tends to be how I approach it. With that said, I'm not opposed to drafting guys that, if you really believe in a tight end, spending a bit of a higher pick to go after them. Because ultimately, you have to look at them like they are just a wide receiver that you play at a different spot in your lineup. So if Jordan Reed is going to outproduce the wide receiver you would draft in, you know, round six, then go ahead and take Jordan Reed. But most of my league mates tend to value the position more highly than I do, and that is why I tend to miss out on the top guys. I have a decent track record of finding undervalued players in the later rounds. Like, I was all over Tyler Eifert last year, and that really paid off for me. You know, brag alert, but that tends to be my philosophy, is that, like, I believe that I can find these guys later, so that's what I try to do.
To me, if you can get a trump card at a position, that's a huge deal. And like you said, if you treat the tight end position like another wide receiver, then whether or not to take Gronkowski comes down to who the other options are when he's available, because he clearly is a trump card. He's much better than the others at his position. But if you're passing up an elite wide receiver who is also kind of has that same role, then it's tougher. But if you're looking at these kind of mediocre kind of wide receiver twos by the time he goes, then it's a different sort of question to me.
Yeah, and Gronk is a really interesting case to me for a couple of reasons. One is that the Patriots don't always use him to his fullest capabilities based on game plan or game script. We saw this a lot last season where it seemed like they kind of locked him up in the garage just so he wouldn't get hurt through the season. And that's not the type of player I want in the first or second round. I want a guy who's going to be targeted heavily every week if I'm drafting a receiver that high. And, I mean, the injury concern is always there with him. And that's another thing that I try to avoid if we're looking at first-round players, second-round players. I want guys who are potentially going to, you know, last all season, be durable throughout my entire campaign to win a fantasy championship. And I don't know if that's a problem with the tight end position in general, just because they are asked to, one, block a lot and, you know, play in the trenches, but also, two, you know, run routes in the middle of the field where they're going to take bigger hits. And the fact that they're bigger dudes means that it's easier to, you know, go at their legs, go at their knees. I mean, we saw it with Jordan Reed, too. That guy has trouble staying healthy. Tyler Eifert. There are trends you can start to see with these elite guys where, you know, when they produce at really high levels, but they tend to be a little riskier. And that's not something I want in the early rounds. If the position itself is inherently risky, I might as well wait. That's kind of how I feel about it. In terms of what you're looking for in tight ends, I think this is important because we've talked about, you know, the freak athletes, you know, the Gronks, the Jordan Reeds, but what other sorts of things can you look for to find a productive fantasy tight end?
Yeah, I think this is a relative mystery as far as fantasy football goes, just because over the last few years, there's been so much math and so much study thrown into the game that we know a lot more about what makes a successful receiver, what makes a successful running back. But tight ends, I don't feel like there's been as much analysis. That's not to say that you can't figure out what makes a good tight end as much as people just haven't looked into it as much. And for me, and this is not based on studies, this is very unscientific, but I tend to look at red zone opportunities and see and kind of assume that past results will kind of predict future results as far as red zone opportunity, but look at offenses that get to the red zone often, look for offenses that throw in the red zone often, and then look at tight ends who have the size and the role on their team that they can be utilized there. Just because for me, I want to look for tight ends that have touchdown potential. PPR guys are great, they're fine, but they just aren't going to be, to me, as reliable as the PPR wide receivers are. I'd rather have a tight end that's valuable in the red zone and not worry as much about his catch totals, because it's those touchdowns, those fluke events that are really going to make a tight end valuable. And so that's kind of what I look at, is the red zone type stats over everything else. I don't know that that's right, but that's kind of the way I've approached the position.
No, I think that's a good approach. You know, a lot of different times you'll watch a game and it just might be a matchup thing where, you know, the opposing defense has a pass rush that's really good, and your PPR tight end is just sitting in there to block more often. And that's not good for your fantasy stats. But if that guy is going to be used in the red zone, that is a potential boon for you because, you know, the other team might expect that tight end to stay in to block. They might, you know, assign, you know, a lesser coverage person to that player at the goal line. And, you know, that's when, who knows, that's when Matthew Stafford finds Eric Ebron for a touchdown, despite the fact that he hasn't done anything else all day. And that size is such a big advantage when you're in those confined spaces at the goal line that I think that you're right. I mean, that's got to be the first thing you look at, is are these guys going to get red zone opportunities? And that idea of role is important, too. It's not just are they going to get red zone opportunities, but are they going to get red zone opportunities more often because the receivers aren't quite as good? I think the Baltimore Ravens in 2015 were a great example of this. After, you know, it was clear that Breshad Perriman was not going to play, they had Kamar Aiken and an old slash hobbled Steve Smith as the receivers. It was pretty clear that their tight ends were going to get opportunities in the red zone. I mean, if you were, you know, on top of that as a fantasy owner, you reaped some amount of reward from that. I mean, Max Williams was a rookie. He didn't pull anything off there, but Crockett Gilmore was there. I mean, he caught four touchdowns, and I mean, that's not a ton for a tight end, but it's, you know, more than Jordan Cameron caught, who was, you know, highly drafted relative to Crockett Gilmore. And it's enough on a streaming basis to be valuable. And that's the sort of stuff you can look for, you know, if you do miss out on the elite tight ends or these guys who are in favorable situations relative to, you know, how their team plays and the other receiving options there.
Yeah, and the Gary Barnage breakout that no one expected and predicted, but that's another example where the wide receiver core on Cleveland's team wasn't stealing a ton of opportunity in the red zone, and so there was kind of a void to fill.
He had the second most targets among all tight ends last year, which is pretty insane.
For someone that wasn't, I mean, his name wasn't known. I mean, he was not on the draft radar at all.
No, not even a little bit. So let's move on now and talk about just some tight ends that we may like or dislike going into 2015. I just mentioned his name, Jordan Cameron. This is a guy who I think is probably going to be undervalued. I think he's probably going to bounce back a little bit in 2016, and he could bounce back in a big way. And those are the types of players that I like to target if I'm going with a late-round tight end. Adam Gase in Miami, often credited for using his tight ends in a favorable way for fantasy owners. And just the fact that I expect that team to be better. He's a guy I think who's a little underrated at this point. We'll see what happens as, you know, the hype machine ramps up with Gase and with the Dolphins as we approach the regular season. But he's one of my guys. How about you, Josh? You got anybody who you think is over or undervalued for 2016?
I think Jordan Cameron's a good call. He's a guy that was drafted highly last year and as kind of a reactionary thing has fallen pretty far. He's tight end 25 right now in MFL 10 drafts. One that I think has probably jumped too far is probably Ladarius Green going to Pittsburgh, that he is currently tight end 8 in the same MFL 10 drafts.
Wow.
And we don't know what he is. I mean, for some reason, he could not beat out an 87-year-old Antonio Gates. And so he may be athletic, but there's something to that. And he could be good, he could be not. But to take him at tight end 8 over some of these more established names, maybe it just is a sign that drafters are saying, look, I'll chase upside, and if they don't work, whatever. I mean, these are MFL 10s, so you don't have a waiver wire, but I would expect you have that same mentality in redraft leagues when they get going. If people just saying, look, I'll take him. If he doesn't work out, I'll dump him and pick up a Jordan Cameron or somebody like that off the waiver wire. So I think Ladarius Green, though, all in all, tight end 8 is very high for someone we know little about. Granted, he's in a good offense. Sure, they lost Martavis Bryant. I get the arguments for him, and there's many of them, but that's a pretty high price for someone we know very little about.
What do you think about Eric Ebron? Do you have the MFL 10 ADP for him handy by chance?
I don't have it handy. I like Eric Ebron. I think he had one of the more underrated starts to a career for a tight end. Tight ends historically start pretty slow, but he's had some good efficiency numbers just per target and per catch. And they have a target vacuum with Calvin Johnson moving on. And it's traditionally been kind of a high volume offense. And they've moved a little closer to the line of scrimmage when Jim Bob Cooter took over the offense. And so I think a lot of things are lining up to suggest that Eric Ebron could be a pretty intriguing fantasy option this year.
Yeah, I'm a little worried that all of the things that you just talked about, and I agree with all of them, I like all of those things for Ebron's fantasy value, are going to vault him a little bit too high to the point where he's overrated. But he is a guy who's interesting. I have a feeling that just based on name value alone, he probably won't be able to surpass, you know, the Eiferts, the Kelseys, the Ertzes, even like Richard Rodgers on the Packers. I think that Ebron is probably still going to be drafted behind those guys, and that might be a mistake. He could have an Eifert-like breakout just based on the fact that Calvin Johnson is gone. Another guy I'm curious to get your take on is Jimmy Graham. And, I mean, this is a guy who, like you said, was drafted as the tight end 2 last season, but now due to injury concerns, we don't really know what's happening with him, and I'm curious to see where you think he belongs and where you think you would draft him.
This is where it gets really tough for me. I have to rely on some of the more medical professionals in the community, because what I understand of his injury makes me very concerned. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe he has the same injury that Victor Cruz had and that kept him out full season. And so I don't know that I want to trust someone coming off a very vicious injury going, like you said earlier, into a a kind of maybe dangerous isn't the right word, but into a dangerous position that's supposed to be able to take hits, and a lot of them low to the knees and the legs. That worries me quite a bit. And so he's an interesting guy if you can get him cheap and kind of sit him on your bench to see what happens. But I worry that with his name, kind of like you were saying, the name value may vault him to a place I'm not comfortable with, just because I don't know that you're going to be able to use him at all early on, much less rely on him until much later. I think he's a guy that'll likely end up on a lot of waiver wires and then maybe becomes valuable later on, but he's a good candidate to start very slow or not at all when the season kicks off, is kind of the way I understand the medical side of things.
All signs are pointing to him not being ready for the start of the year, and that's kind of a non-starter for me. If that's the case, I'm just not going to touch him, if only because we don't know what he's going to be like even when he does come back off the physically unable to perform list. I wouldn't really touch him with a 10-foot pole. And a lot of that has to do not only with his, injury concern, but also with the fact that the Seattle offense didn't really miss a beat in the second half without him. I just don't know if they need him anymore, to the point where there's no need to rush him back. Why invest fantasy-wise in a guy who might not play until, week 10 or something, and even then, maybe not even at full strength. I would avoid him. The other guy I want to note, and this will be my last one, is Charles Clay of the Bills. And he had a few just really solid games last year, and a lot of, disappearing at games too. But I think that the offense should get better. We've talked about this already on the episode. I'm a Tyrod believer. I think that Clay could be good again, and while I don't know if I would take him early, I think that he definitely deserves to be, considered in the top 15 tight ends. And a guy who, if you are going to wait at the position, is an interesting guy to target.
Yeah, this kind of fits in with my view of Tyrod Taylor, is that my worry is the low volume of the Bills' pass offense. You're right that Clay had some really good weeks, and then he had several really bad, disastrous weeks. I think I'm looking at it right now. He had 6 weeks, it looks like, with fewer than 20 yards. And he saw decent targets in a lot of games, but he also had some pretty low 2-3 target games. And so I think what you see is a lot of fluctuation. But like you said, he could be so cheap this year that if you just know you're getting a guy that's kind of up and down, and maybe he gets some looks, maybe he doesn't, maybe it's worth it to you because you're paying so little. But I do think that the low volume and inconsistency makes him a tough guy to rely upon. To me, he'd be more of a, I'll plug him in if I have a need in a given week, more so than I'll just take him, plan on playing him most weeks.
Yeah, that's fair. Anybody else you want to note?
Jason Morrow is an interesting name to me just because I liked him before he got injured, the Jets tight end. I am still interested to see, but we haven't seen a whole lot of him. But he's going so late in NFL 10s. He's the tight end 28 right now. So he's a guy you could stash in a deep league, things like that. And just to circle back to your original question, it looks like Eric Ebron is tight end 11 right now in NFL 10. So he is going as kind of a tight end one, a very low tight end one.
Yeah, still, that's a little higher than I might have expected, but I do think it's probably warranted. So I kind of want to shift gears here. I think we've talked enough about tight ends. I want to get to our quarterback spotlight for the episode. RG3, Mr. Griffin III. And he's an interesting case. We don't really have a whole lot of data on him at all from the past 2 seasons. And I mean, it's easy to look at what he did in 2012 and 2013 and say, yes, there's potential. This is a guy who could, if given the right situation, turn his career around, turn a franchise around if everything works out. But based upon what we saw last season and the year before, there are a lot of concerns. And I mean, he might just be done. And before we get into, potential landing spots, I just want to ask you, what do you think? Do you think Griffin has anything to offer? Do you think he's done? What would it take for him to become not only just a viable NFL quarterback again, but a viable fantasy quarterback again?
I don't think he's done, and some of that might be the bias that I want to see him succeed. I want to see him get a good opportunity, but I don't think he's done. I don't think we saw a physical or mental status that would suggest he's just completely done, I would be worried if he ends up in another dysfunctional situation, particularly, we'll get to landing spots, but the Browns, someone that has instability, that's not a well-run organization, that would worry me. Because we have seen the effects of a poorly run Redskins franchise, as much as that pains me to say, but seeing how bad the tension was between RG3 and the Shanahans, and just when there was chaos that he didn't always respond to it well. I think that the physical talent is still there. He still is going to have the same rushing ability. He still has great passing accuracy and can really sling the ball downfield. It really is more about, is his mind going to be in the right place? Is he going to be put in a system that really highlights his strengths? And so I don't think he's done, but I do think his situation will be an important factor in whether he's fantasy relevant or not.
Yeah, I do worry that opposing teams figured him out to some extent and were able to, once you can take his rushing ability away, and I think this is a recurring theme throughout the league, to be honest. I think you saw this with Michael Vick, you saw it with Colin Kaepernick to some extent, where these guys who have so much of their value tied into running the ball can actually become a little predictable. Now, the difference between those other two guys I mentioned and Robert Griffin is that Griffin was actually a pretty good passer that rookie season he had. And even in 2014, before he got hurt, wasn't awful. You know, I mean, he was playing okay. I do have concerns, though, that the league is caught up to the rushing quarterback in general, that he might be damaged a little bit beyond repair in terms of his, you know, psychological makeup after what happened in Washington. That, I mean, yeah, I think that the situation would have to be perfect for him to do that. And, I mean, you mentioned Cleveland. I agree. I don't think Cleveland is that place necessarily because just of the way that franchise has been for the past however many years. What other landing spots intrigue you? What do you think is, let's put it this way, what do you think is the best situation for Robert Griffin given the current landscape of the NFL?
Of what's still available and not looking at what's likely, I'd love to see him go to the Broncos, a team that is not going to make the quarterback the end-all be-all, that is going to really be a strong defense that's going to say, look, we don't need you to win us the game. And I also think well of Gary Kubiak and the way he runs the offense, and I think that his ability to utilize a bootleg to move the pocket, to get the quarterback out and moving around, I think some of those things would play well to RG3's strengths. And I think that all in all, it would be good for Griffin to go into a situation with a pretty reasonably good team around him and a reasonably stable team that says, look, we know that you can be successful. Don't play outside yourself. Trust the players around you. I think that would be a pretty ideal situation of the ones that are available. Obviously, there's better situations if we envisioned him backing someone up that got injured, but of the places he could go and reasonably start week one, the Broncos are probably the most intriguing to me. Do you see anywhere else, or is that kind of how you feel as well?
I agree that the Broncos seem like the best fit, if only for all the reasons I outlined with Mark Sanchez earlier, where the quarterback doesn't have to be the best guy on the field because the rest of that team can be so good. If he's not asked to pass too much, if he's just asked to, you know, kind of control the game and, you know, make a few plays as opposed to, you know, save an entire franchise like he was asked to do in Washington. I think that that's the kind of situation he's to find himself in. Another couple places that have been floated around, you know, for RG3 are the Jets and the Rams. I can see the appeal of him going to the Jets, but I just don't think the Jets have any need to sign him when they already have Geno Smith on the roster and I'm sure are still in discussions with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think that's kind of a pipe dream for Jets fans if they're interested in Robert Griffin at all. The Rams, kind of like the Browns, just seem like a place I wouldn't want him to go. I guess you could apply the same logic I just made for Sanchez and the Broncos to the Rams in that their defense is going to be good. They have a good running game with Todd Gurley. I just hate Jeff Fisher. I want nothing to do with his QBs. And God, he's That just doesn't seem like a good spot for him, especially because the expectations will be high their first season in Los Angeles.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I would not be excited about St. Louis, about RG3 in St. Louis. And your point is a good one, that going to the Jets wouldn't make a lot of sense, given that they have two quarterbacks there if Ryan Fitzpatrick signs. There's also the latest rumors are that the Jets would be interested in Josh McCown from the Browns.
Oh,
and it kind
no.
of says they're just looking for a boring, older, kind of middle of the road passer rather than someone young, and who knows why that is. But they really haven't shown the interest in RG3, even though he came to visit. It really seems like they've kind of moved past that.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I get it. I don't think they need that type of player. I think if they're going to go with a younger guy, they should just draft somebody. Are there any other teams that come to mind? I have one, but it's a little bit of a pipe dream.
Yeah, I think that it could be interesting to see him go to Kansas City and play a backup to Alex Smith.
Oh, that was not expected. That's interesting.
I don't have any reason to think it would happen, but I think that kind of situation where it's another reasonably stable team, decent defense, Alex Smith plays a more mobile game, I think that could be an interesting place for him to go and learn and probably be able to start reasonably soon. But I don't think it will happen, but that would be an intriguing kind of lottery pick, if you will, of where he could go.
Yeah, mine would just be the Niners. If they do get rid of Colin Kaepernick,
sure.
I think we've seen Chip Kelly show that he has interest in having a rushing capable quarterback. That's another situation, though, that's just so bad in terms of the rest of the pieces on that squad. I worry that if he went there, he would just get battered like he did, in Washington in 2014. Of course, the Niners are sounding the alarm and trumpeting that Kaepernick will be with them when the season starts and all that fun stuff. But I think we can pretty safely assume that if he doesn't want to be there, they're probably going to have to get rid of him one way or another. And they will have to bring in somebody else in theory. Now, whether they just draft somebody, that seems more likely. But if they were to bring in RG3, I think that'd be interesting. I think he's probably better than Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, it certainly would be interesting to see what Chip would do with him. I, if memory serves, kind of the deadline for Kaepernick's guaranteed money this year, I think, is April 1st. So we should likely know that here in the next week or so. That would be an interesting one to me.
Yeah, it's just another spot where he does seem to have an avenue to start sooner rather than later if the team saw him in that way. That's all I've got on RG3. Is there anything else you want to add here, Josh?
Yeah, no, I think that about covers it. He's another one where we'll probably know in the next few weeks where he's going to land, and there is some fantasy potential there. He's not someone that you should be dumping in dynasty leagues, but I also wouldn't go overboard. I don't think, given where he's likely to end up, that he should be perceived as an immediate starter in your two quarterback and super flex leagues.
All right, moving on. Let's get into the listener and Twitter questions that we've got. There aren't too many. First one comes from US Aaron M1 on Twitter. He says he has a Superflex question. He has pick 102, so second pick overall. He owns Romo and Dalton. He says who to pick or try to trade for a quarterback. Which QB is the limit? I'm not exactly sure what he means by which QB is the limit, but it does sound like he's planning on picking a quarterback with the second pick overall. Does this seem like a dynasty question to you?
Yeah, I think he's got to mean the 102 rookie pick there. So I would assume he's thinking, what do I do with that second pick? I would assume, let's just say that we assume Ezekiel Elliott is the 101, that running back is off the board and you've got the other options available, because it kind of seems to be trending that way. For me, at least, I would say I don't think that either quarterback is going to end up as the second overall pick. So I would be going away from quarterback with his pick. And so if he really feels he needs to upgrade to trade back or trade for a quarterback, I wouldn't be burning the second pick on a quarterback. I'd go receiver if I felt like I had to make a pick there.
Yeah, I agree that I would not take a quarterback there. If we're talking about a rookie draft, I'd just go with a running back or a wide receiver. In terms of what to do with the two quarterbacks you have. I mean, Romo and Dalton seem fine to me. I mean, Romo's a little risky, we've seen Dalton kind of be up and down over the past few years, but I trust him a fair amount going into 2016. I mean, if those are your only two quarterbacks, you definitely need to get a third one at some point. Or maybe not definitely. It is a super flex league, not a two quarterback league. Yeah, I don't know. I think that 102, you definitely don't want to look at quarterbacks there. I think you're giving away too much draft capital to immediately jump on a QB there.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And trading, even though it's perceived to be a weaker draft class, I think you could get some pretty interesting quarterback talk for 102. It probably wouldn't be one of the elite guys. It probably wouldn't be a top 10 guy. But I think you could get some interesting feelers out there, particularly if you wait till after the NFL draft and people start really getting excited about rookies. I bet you could get a pretty reliable starter out of the 102 if you felt like you needed to trade it for a quarterback.
Yeah, now if this was just a general keeper question where you have Romo and Dalton and, you know, every team keeps, you know, like 4 to 6 guys or something like that, and you're wondering what to do or which quarterback to take, I mean, I don't know. Again, I think you're pretty well set with Romo and Dalton in theory, to the point where I wouldn't be drafting a quarterback in that situation either. I just wanted to kind of throw that out there in case this question wasn't dynasty related.
Fair.
Our next question is from @KipNylock, Colin O'Leary on Twitter. He says, in a two quarterback PPR dynasty league rookie draft, where would you draft Wentz, Goff, and Lynch? I feel like we've answered this question to some extent on previous episodes, but let's kind of go over where we're at now. Josh, what do you think? Has anything changed for you?
No, not a lot. I think it's looking very likely that the Browns take a quarterback, and that's going to be painful because we're going to have to debate, okay, is he a likely starter, but then is it a bad team? Oh, is he going to play with Josh Gordon? And so it's going to be a really weird dynamic. So I think whoever goes there is likely going to fall in kind of a middle of the first round range, just like I thought before. I also would just point to Anthony's armchair scouting reports. He gives kind of his projections for these three, and I think he also said mid to late first for Wentz and Goff.
What about Lynch? Because he seems to be a bit of a wild card here. We know that Wentz and Goff are kind of the QBs 1A and 1B in this NFL draft. Lynch doesn't have quite the same hype or prestige around him, but could you see him going in the first round of a 2QB dynasty league as well, or is he more of a second round guy in a rookie draft?
I think for him, more than for the other two, by a lot more, his is going to depend on his NFL draft position. With the other two, we could feel confident they're going to go in the first round. It's just a matter of where they go and which team. Lynch is likely to be a first rounder, but there's no guarantee. I don't think he's near the talent. I don't think he's as nearly as NFL ready as the other two. And so I don't feel comfortable guaranteeing where I would take him right now, just because we don't know. To me, his NFL draft stock is going to be a huge indicator of what you should pay for him. If I was drafting before the NFL draft, which some dynasty leagues do, I wouldn't take him as a first rounder. I don't think he has the talent that he should be perceived that way. So I'd be waiting to the second round if I had to draft, not knowing where he was going.
All right, our next question comes from @dkelso23. It's a long one. It's a keeper question for a two-quarterback league. You lose the draft pick of the round where the player is drafted. His keepers are Gurley, Hopkins, Bortles, David Johnson, and he has the number one pick. He's asking who his fifth keeper should be. He can keep Carlos Hyde in round 8, Mark Ingram in round 12, or he says should he try to trade for something else. And he also asks, with the number one pick, do you take Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham if they're available? Let's address that first. Yes, you take either one of them. I don't think you can go wrong. I would lean Antonio Brown. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, I like Antonio Brown. He's pretty well guaranteed. We know what he is. I mean, they're both good. You're not going to go wrong either way, but I'd slightly edge towards Antonio Brown.
Exactly.
Better offense.
Yeah, I agree. So then let's talk about his fifth keeper here. Carlos Hyde, Mark Ingram, or try to trade. I would be inclined to keep Mark Ingram. That would set him up with a running back stable of Todd Gurley, David Johnson, and Mark Ingram. That seems pretty insane to me when he also has the first pick overall.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm choosing between Hyde in round 8 and Ingram in round 12, I definitely would agree. I'd go with Ingram round 12. The trading, it's so, keeper leagues are so unique that it's hard to say what you could get. I don't know that you'd need three running backs. If you could get something interesting in trade, either a quarterback or a receiver, maybe that's good, but I definitely would prefer a later Ingram to an earlier Hyde.
Yeah, that's a fair point. If you do have the number one pick, in theory, you could take a running back there as well if guys like Brown and Beckham are kept, which I don't understand why they wouldn't be, to be honest. But yeah, I could see trading Hyde or Ingram for a quarterback. I think you're set with those first four keepers, though, Gurley, Hopkins, Bortles, and David Johnson. I'm not a huge Bortles guy, but in round 17, that's a fine value. I think you got to keep him there. Anything else to add on this one, Josh?
No, I think that keeper is so, like I said, each league is so different, but my general rule of thumb is if you can keep good players late, that's what I would default to. So when I'm looking at two running backs, Hyde and Ingram, they're both fine, but Ingram, four rounds later, seems like the right choice to me.
Yeah, I actually might even have Ingram ranked higher than Hyde to go into next season anyway. So the discount in terms of the round where you lose to keep him is really significant for me. He's definitely the choice in my mind. Our last Twitter question comes from Peter at PWH13. He asks, what is the value of Brock Osweiler in Superflex in comparison to Tyrod? Or he says Tygod, excuse me. 12-team Superflex.
What do you think on this one? I know you like Tyrod and probably like Osweiler less, but just how much less do you like Osweiler?
Yeah, I mean, Osweiler to me is like a low-end QB2, and Tyrod to me is like a high-end QB2 or low-end QB1. The rushing aspect is a big deal for me with Tyrod. I think that floor you get from him, if we assume that the cost is equal for either of these guys, which they won't be if you're just drafting, then I'd much rather have Tyrod. Now, if I have to pay like a fifth round price to get Tyrod, but I can get Osweiler in, you know, the 10th round, then that's a little different. But if you're asking me in a vacuum which guy I like, I much prefer Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, I think it's clear that Tyrod is the better player, the better option for 2016. I would put those two closer together than you would, but Osweiler, because I think he's going to get high volume and he's throwing to DeAndre Hopkins. Taylor, I've already explained why I'm a little cautious on him, but I would completely agree with everything you said. I would just have them slightly closer than you would.
Yeah, I mean, just I pulled up our rankings here just for comparison's sake. I have Tyrod Taylor ranked 10th among quarterbacks, and we've already talked about how I'm higher on him than you are and a lot of other rankers, and clearly the Twitter poll followers. And I, for comparison, have Osweiler ranked 26th. So that's not really indicative of me saying he's, you know, not worthy of being a fantasy starter. I think that he very well could be for the right team. I just, that tier of QBs between like Kirk Cousins and Brock Osweiler, Sam Bradford, Teddy Bridgewater, it's so muddled to me that all those guys are close enough in value that I don't really differentiate between them all too much. I think that I have to rank them in some order, and that's just where Brock Osweiler shook out. But again, this is as of, I don't know, like a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, things could very well change. If we see Osweiler put together a good preseason, then he might shoot up my rankings. I could see him getting into that, you know, QB 15 to QB 20 range if he starts to look good and we're hearing good things out of camp. But at this point, he's so unproven, whereas I've seen Tyrod Taylor do it before and I've seen him, you know, run the ball successfully, that he's a guy that I do like. I probably have him overranked the more and more I think about it, but it's not that close. Not for me.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It's not close, and my difference from you is a minor difference.
Yep. All right, that wraps things up. Time to sign this episode 4 off, the RG3 Experience. Want to remind you, as always, to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done so already. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher. We have an RSS feed you can follow. Go ahead, leave a review if you would. That would be much appreciated. That helps us get the word out, get the podcast out to more people. if you want to get a hold of us, you can find me on Twitter at Greg Sauce. You can find Josh on Twitter at Lake2QBs. We have a website. You may have heard of it, 2QBs.com. That's TWOQBS.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at 2QBs. For longer form emails, you can always contact us at 2QBs@gmail.com. You can search us up on Facebook as well. Give us a like. Altogether, a bunch of fun stuff going on. We're kind of in the dog days of, you know, fantasy prep. I feel like the combine gets people pumped up, and now we enter this lull before the draft. I'm curious to see how this next month plays out. I think towards the end of April, we'll start to feel that momentum come back. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, the draft is really kind of kicking it off. Like, we are moving into the next season, so it's coming.
Yeah, and there's so many unknowns still. Like, I can't wait for the draft to settle some of that stuff out. I'm sure we'll see a bunch of, you know, trades and fun picks that will really impact, you know, basically take all the work we've done so far and just flush it right down the toilet. Can't wait. Really looking forward to that. But anyway, thank you again, as always, for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll catch you next time here on the Two Quarterback Experience. Have a good one.